Good evening and welcome to another edition of Naturally Good for You, the show designed to give important information about nutritional supplements and alternative medicine so you can make more informed choices about your own good health. I'm your host, Deborah Doc Watson, and my goodness, we have a great hour lined up for you right now. I can tell you, I first learned of this doctor a number of years ago when I first started my health food store, Doc Watson's Center for Well-Being, actually. And at first, I wasn't exactly sure what it was all about until I read his first book, which is Eat Right for Your Blood Type. And I became fascinated with what he had to say about food and these constituents in food that really are unhealthy for us and how it affects different blood types. And I, from what I can gather, that his father had actually started this work before him, and he has just taken it to the next level. And he's written a number of books. One of them is Eat Right for Your Blood Type, also Cook Right for Your Blood Type. There's Live Right for Your Blood Type. He's got an encyclopedia. You can actually get the Eat Right for Your Blood Type is all four blood types in one book, but you can also get a little paperback book that are just for your blood type. If you don't want to find out about for anybody else, you can just get the one book for your blood type. If you don't know what your blood type is, it's a simple test. You can get it. Most health food stores will have the blood typing test that you can take. It's a good idea to get your blood type. And the doctor I'm talking about is Dr. Peter Diadamo, and he's written some new books, and we're going to learn all about them right now. Welcome to the show, Dr. Adamo. Diadamo, I'm sorry.
Oh, hi, Deborah. How are you?
I'm fine. You know what? I actually have all your books here at the store. You know, we have Doc Watson's health stuff now. And we carry every one of your books, except for the new ones, because I didn't know about them, or I would have gotten those too. And we also carry your products, which I really believe people need to be doing. And I wanted to talk with you about some issues that have come up recently because of a new testing that can be run, the IgG test I'm talking about. And it's actually, because I'm a type A, and I was noticing there were some problems, and what it did was show some of the very foods that you're telling me to avoid, I actually have a problem with, that this test showed up. So this can have a profound effect on a person, the way we express our genes, the fact that we age faster, we put on a lot of weight. All of this could be affected by some of the foods that we're eating that we shouldn't be. So first, let's talk about what is eating right for your blood type. What does that mean?
I think it really just started out as a way to try to explain why some people did well on one type of a diet and other people didn't. And then for your listeners to understand the history behind this, this is a concept that goes back probably 50 years now and was put forward first by my father, who was actually one of the early naturopaths who had studied in Europe and had gotten into a habit of putting his patients on the type of diet that people were given at the time, healthy diet, I guess you would say. But a lot of people did not as well on that diet as he was led to believe. In that case, there was a lot of, you know, granola and stuff like that. And so he looked at blood as a way of, I think, trying to understand why that was the case. He thought, well, blood goes through the body, it delivers nutrients to the tissues, and maybe there was something in the blood type that was different from one person to another. And he sort of wrote a book on it. It was a simple book. It didn't have a lot of science behind it, but he's a very intuitive guy. Mm-hmm. And he actually hit the nail right on the head. He, in this simple book, he said, you know, the A's go this way, more vegetable, plant-based diet. The O's go that way, more protein-based diet. He's saying this basically, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was at Vassar College at the time as a student. I had to do a grand rounds or kind of a dissertation kind of a thing. And I looked at the blood type, and I must admit, I didn't think much of it. I was, you know, taught what people learn in medical school about blood types, which is not much. But they teach you, hey, you know, you can't put this blood in that person. You know, you can't give, for instance, the person
right,
type
sure.
O, you can't give them type A blood. But that's it. That's all they teach you about blood types. Just don't put this blood in that person. So I didn't get much to go on, so I thought, you know, it's a pretty big leap, you know, to basically make a statement like that. But I was talking to one of my instructors at the time, and he said, you know, it's interesting. He said, your dad should go and look at the studies that link ulcers to blood type. And I listened to this, and I said, gee, ulcers in blood type. I mean, there's a link to a disease that has something to do with your digestive tract. I never heard anything about this. So I went to the medical library. At the time, I was in Washington State. University of Washington was right next door. Sat in the library for a couple of days and started going through all the old journals. And lo and behold, there were lots of articles on blood type and diseases, for sure. But they were diseases that I never had been taught were linked to blood type. They seemed to be diseases that had sometimes nothing to do with your blood. Who had more ulcers? Who had more arthritis? Who got more cancer? So that kind of got me started. And I thought, well, you know, if we go from the blood thing forward, we just keep working on that, more and more will become gradually unveiled as we kind of investigate this and delve deeper. So 25 years later, you know, we got all this additional knowledge that has been put in those books. He Writes for Your Type is a great book. It's a very simple book, great introduction to the concept. But it's such a beautiful concept that it's so simple for people to understand. And yet if they want to go any deeper into it, it's all there as well.
Sure.
They can take the hood up, and there's all the deep stuff if they want it. Or they can put the hood down, and they can go drive it, you know, get what they need. Might be just a way to eat healthy, but, you know, it's there for them if they want the data as well.
Yeah. Well, I carried the books. I had Crick Johnson on my show a couple of times because he is your representative here in the area.
Yeah, Crick's a smart guy.
Yes, and we did. We actually did a little luncheon here one day, and we made 23 foods. We actually served 23 different dishes based on the Eat Right Pure Blood type. And there were only, of the 24 dishes that we made, only four of them were blood type specific. In other words, all of the other ones, the 20, anybody could eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on what we could glean from your books, so that there's a lot of food out there that are good for everybody. And then there are some that are specific for each blood type. Now, what is it that when we talk about eating right for your blood type, what's happening in the body when you're not eating a when you're eating a food that's not good for you?
Well, you brought up the question of the IgG, was it?
Yes.
Well, that's an, as listeners probably some would know, that's an antibody, and it's made in response to some sort of something called an antigen, which is a fancy word for something foreign. It's something that's not you.
Right.
So when we get exposed to something that's not us, and it's a virus or a bacteria or something, a lot of times we make an antibody to it, and that antibody either kills it on its own or tags it, and then the immune system comes along and sees the tag and goes, oh, you got to go. So the idea of an antibody is kind of critical to a lot of food allergy testing. It's critical to immunology and infections and things. It's pretty critical to blood type as well. Because it turns out that I said before, if you put the wrong blood in somebody, they don't do very well. A lot of people die. It's a very powerful reaction. And the reason being is that the antibodies that, for instance, would be a problem if I put my blood type A in somebody who was blood type O, are very primitive antibodies and they're very strong. And unlike the IgG antibodies, these are called IgM, they actually kill things. They don't even need the immune system. They don't need to tag it or anything. They, once they get hold of something bad, they just kill it. Very primitive and very old. The IgG antibodies are a little bit more sophisticated. They're more like a, kind of like a smart bomb. They sort of just get on the bad guys, but the immune system still has to come by and do the killing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get a blood type reaction, it's a very, very violent, vicious reaction, and that's why people can be very sick and die. Now, why would somebody have an antibody to another human being? You know, it doesn't make sense. You would think,
sure.
Well, then, you know, that doesn't make sense in any kind of a evolutionary or natural selection or even just common sense. It would make a lot more sense to think, oh, we can take our blood from anybody and give it to anybody. It would be a lot more useful that way. But we can't. And the reason being that we have so many different blood types, not just ABO, but Rh and all sorts of other things. And when we make an antibody, when we have a reaction to another person giving us the wrong blood type, we're really not making a reaction to another human being. We're making a reaction to a subuniverse of all the things in nature that look like that. Now, to understand that, we understand that, like, viruses have blood types, parasites have blood types. things that don't even have blood type.
Wow.
And that's what we're reacting to.
Okay, we got to go to a break, Dr. D'Adamo. And so let's pick this up when we come back. We'll be right back with more Naturally Good for You, and I guess this hour, Dr. Peter D'Adamo. Stay with us.
To the show.
We're back, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Naturally Good for You radio show. I'm your host, Deborah Doc Watson. We've got with us today Dr. Peter D'Adamo, author of Eat Right for Your Blood Type, the entire series. He's got a number of books. I don't know how many books you have now. Do you mind if I call you Peter?
No, by all means.
But the whole thing is all these books are a diet solution to staying younger, longer, healthier, and achieving the way you are meant to be. I know myself that I can tell you I'm a type A, and I have since decided after this IgG test that I took that I was sensitive to 29 foods, and some of which are on my list that I can eat, that I needed to do something. And I thought I was eating a pretty healthy diet, but apparently I was eating some of the wrong things. And you were talking about these different antigens that are in our blood that were causing some problems, and how, what exactly is happening?
Well, you know, if we just, I always like to use myself as an example because, you know, it's worked for me for the last quarter century, so I just keep going with it. But basically, I'm type A, so if you were to give me type B blood, I would, you know, not do well. Actually, what would happen is my blood would clot up inside of me because of the reaction to that B antigen. I react to type B blood because I carry something in my blood called anti-B. So here I am, I'm A. I don't like things that look like B.
Okay.
I could also say that people who are B are probably not terribly fond of me. They like B things, but they don't like A things. And actually, type O is the most intolerant. They don't like anything. They don't like A, they don't like B.
Okay.
So in essence, basically, you have this kind of round robin of who likes who and who doesn't like who. Sort of like my daughter and her friends, who's in this week, who's out that week. The interesting thing, though, is that let's look at Peter D'Adamo's anti-B antibody. I wasn't born with this antibody. It actually was made in me as my mother gave me foods that looked immunologically like B blood. And as various bacteria went into me as I was weaned off breast milk, that looked like blood type B, I started reacting. So my immune system has a line in the sand that says, we like things in this world that look like A, we don't like things in this world that look like B. And vice versa with B, and of course O doesn't like anything. So here you have this kind of constellation of likes and dislikes, and it would make perfect sense because long before there were antibiotics or emergency rooms, you had plagues and pestilence, and you had, you know, bubonic this and malaria that. And what happened is the only way that nature could guarantee that there would be some survival strategy was to have certain differences between populations so that any one group was not uniformly susceptible to everything. There would always be clusters that had some ability to resist that.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, if you look at the most common diseases that actually killed people in the most numerous amounts in the pre-medical, pre-modern medicine days, they all show some blood type specificity. So it turns out that your blood type is a reaction to bacteria and microbes. It's a reaction to foods. It's a reaction to a whole variety of immunological and environmental types of things where your immune system has to draw a line in the sand and say, this is me, this is not me.
Okay.
This is me, this is not me.
Okay, before we go any further, we do have a caller. Victoria from Maryland?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Thank you for hosting Dr. D'Adamo today.
I know it. He's wonderful, isn't he?
Yeah, I have a relative who says that they are a non-secretor, and I was wondering if you could explain that.
Victoria, I will do my best. It's a bit esoteric, but if you can imagine, as we said before, that a blood type is actually not always found in your blood. So, for instance, if you watch, what is this TV show, CSI or Law and Order or something like that?
Either any one of those where they have forensic evidence, yes.
Exactly. They'll turn around and say, the rapist was a B secretor. And how could you say something like that? Well, if you could get the semen sample from the victim and you found a blood type in there, that meant that that person was capable of secreting their blood type in their secretions. In this case, it would be semen. But about 85% of us have a gene that allows us to put our blood type in things like our semen, our saliva, perspiration, vaginal fluids, things like that, sweat. About 15% of us are missing the gene to do that. So these people only secrete their blood type in certain parts of their digestive tract and on their cells of their bloodstream. These people are called non-secretors. Not too far of a throw on that one.
Oh, we just lost her, but...
I'm sure she's listening.
Yeah, she is.
Now, it turns out that 85% of us who are secretors, it's sort of like, you know how like 85% of us are right-handed? So if you're like left-handed, you're at a disadvantage because all the things in this world are designed for right-handed people.
Okay.
Well, being a non-secretor is like having a left-handed immune system in a right-handed world. They tend to have more problems associated with chronic infections because your body actually likes to have your blood type out in your secretions. It acts like a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere you look at, think about what we're talking about, saliva, vaginal fluid. These are all portals, you know, where things grow, where you interact with the environment. So your body's always throwing, if you're a secretor, throws your blood type out there. Like, for instance, I am a secretor, so if you went into my mouth, you'd find blood type A stuff. Because my body's actually throwing it out there, trying to condition this portal to be friendly to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're missing the gene to do this, you don't do that. So your immune system actually doesn't have an advantage in terms of conditioning these areas. And they have certain other types of issues with regard to how intact their barriers are and stuff. So it's kind of funny. It's actually older. But it's like an immune system like the rest of the world who are secretors. It's like a city with a wall around it. If you're a non-secretor, you never built the wall. You just kind of designed your whole thing to fight the bad guys in the streets, so to speak. You never actually left them out in the beginning. You actually invited them in and tried to fight them in the town. So these people have more candidiasis problems, they have more environmental sensitivity problems, they have more metabolic syndrome X, they have a lot of things. And it's a very critical thing because, you know, I write most of my books and everybody goes, well, blood type, you know, A, O, A, B, and O. But this secretor, non-secretor thing is an incredibly critical component, and it's amazing how many alternative practitioners are unaware of the significance of the secretor status when so much of it, of our dealings with people center around chronic low-grade yeast infections, metabolic syndrome. You'd want to think that you would be interested in a test that could actually give you that population of people that are going to be the most problematic. It turns out that these are these non-secretors.
Mm-hmm. In the case of somebody who is a non-secretor, when you say the chronic, it could also be that they would even have problems with food, too. If somebody was type A and they were a non-secretor, it might be more problematic. Even they have to eat a stricter diet than if it was just an A secretor.
That's right. Well, that's a great question. Now, here's an interesting one. One of the things that non-secretors do not do well is secrete certain enzymes in their intestinal tract. And these enzymes that they don't secrete so great are what are called phosphatases and certain types of other enzymes called hydroxylases. These are in your small intestine that help you break down fat and stuff. So, for instance, if you're a non-secretor, you don't actually, if you're type A non-secretor, you don't have the enzyme in your intestinal tract to help you break down fat very efficiently. Now, if you were to look in terms of blood types, what's the blood type that has the most of these enzymes? Type O. So here's a blood type that's ideally designed for eating meat, that in addition to having a lot of other reasons to eat meat, actually have the highest level of enzymes in their intestinal tract that are there to split cholesterol and to actually help the body assimilate calcium. That enzyme in type O is turned on by protein. So if you're type O blood and you eat protein, you turn an enzyme on in your intestinal tract that helps you assimilate calcium and split cholesterol. Now, this is counterintuitive to everything that you will read about nutrition in the year 2006, where people tell you you have to be a vegetarian to get your cholesterol down, and essentially, if you eat meat, it's going to inhibit your calcium absorption, and yet in blood type O, it's the exact opposite.
Wow. We got to go to a break. We'll be back with more of Nasri Goodview and a guest this hour, Dr. Peter Diadamo. Stay with us.
Consultation with a qualified medical doctor. We encourage you to make an appointment with your own doctor in order to resolve any of your health concerns. Now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Naturally Good For You radio show. I'm your host, Deborah Doc Watson, and I'm talking this hour with Dr. Peter Diadamo. He is the author of a number of books, all having to do with doing the right thing for your blood type. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, and it is more important than you can possibly imagine. And I know that you've come up with some new books. One is on menopause, the other is anti-aging. What's the one about menopause?
Well, you know, the whole idea of that was to develop a library of specific books. So I think there's about eight of them, and these are the last two,
okay, so
menopause and aging.
Okay, but you have one on cardiovascular health.
Mm-hmm.
You have one on diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
You have one on cancer. You have one on cancer?
Yep.
Okay.
I think we have one on fatigue.
Fatigue.
Arthritis.
Arthritis. Diabetes. Did I say diabetes? Okay.
Diabetes and allergy.
Allergy,
menopause, and aging.
Menopause and aging. Okay, now let's just talk a minute about the menopause book. Now, what's specific about the menopause book that would be different if they were just reading the Eat Right for Your Blood Type?
Well, each one of the books that are part of the disease series have, you know, your listeners, if they've read Eat Right for Your Type, they'll be aware of the notion that in the blood type system, you know, there's a lot of different blood types, and so, well, how do you come up with a grading system for foods? And the closest thing I could think of was, you know, red light, green light, yellow light kind of thing. So there's a kind of certain class of foods. If you're type A, here are the fish that are beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that help you. Here are the bunch of foods or fish, let's say we'll stick with that category, that are neutral. These ones are not going to hurt you. They're not going to really have any special characteristics either. And then finally, there's this avoid category. You ought not to eat those things. In the disease books, there was the opportunity to create a category that was above and beyond simply beneficial, but actually beneficial for you as per that illness.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, in the case of menopause, what we tried to do was, in the understanding of each of the different blood types, like we talked a little bit about that enzyme that is responsible for calcium absorption.
Yes.
And cholesterol splitting. Well, if you're type A and you're a non-secretor, or even if you're type A, it's not that high. So let's compose a short list of foods that are rich in certain types of amino acids that are known to increase that enzyme. So each one of the books for the diseases was fashioned with what a category that was called, I guess for lack of anything more original, super beneficial. And these were beneficials that were the kind of specific to that disease beneficial. For instance, if you're a diabetes patient, you're going to want to know the types of foods that are beneficial for your blood type that are rich in something called quercetin, which is a very useful antioxidant that all diabetics should be interested in. If you're in, let's say, a blood type diet that's specific for cardiovascular disease, you'd want to know which of the beneficials are the ones that are going to have the most profound effect on reducing the inflammation on your artery lining. So the idea of the health library was to take the generic blood type diet and go into those food categories and find the short list of things that you could give to somebody with a specific problem and say, these are the things you really want to concentrate on.
Mm-hmm.
And in menopause, we looked at detoxification of certain types of estrogenic compounds. We looked at ways of minimizing the unpleasant side effects, hot flashes and sleep disturbance and loss of libido. So that was kind of the basic premise of the whole series, was to come up with something that, you know, I mean, I've given so many lectures and talked to so many people, and they always come up and they go, okay, I read your book. Now, really, tell me the things I really should do. I've got this condition. So, you know, I guess everybody wants an executive summary of one form or another. So here, if you have a specific illness and you happen to have one in this series, it's sort of an executive summary for that illness.
I see. So for women with menopause, if they want to, let's say it's excess estrogen, they would want to be doing broccoli, cruciferous vegetables.
Right, or they might want to be looking at things that basically enhance phase two or phase one detoxification.
Okay.
There, you know, so this is sort of like where that went. And then, and, you know, a lot of the herbal suggestions and supplement suggestions go a step further into that specific process as well.
Well, that's good, because I think that women are missing the boat when they don't eat right. When they're not eating right to begin with, and they're having problems, to mask it with drugs, that doesn't help the matter. That just makes it
worse. The problem is that we don't know what the phrase "to eat right" means.
Mm-hmm.
because to eat right means a different thing to each person that you discuss eating right with.
Right, sure.
If we look at any number of the diet books out there, they have a particular type of theory. My theory is this, and everyone should do this because it works in everybody, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be some people that that particular theory doesn't work with. There's always going to be people who don't like that theory because they have a completely different theory. So the question being, in order for one theory to be right, some other theory must essentially
be wrong.
In order
yes.
for the vegetarians to be right, the paleo guys must be wrong, and vice versa. But what about a theory that says, nah, they're all right, but we want to identify in some reliably genetic, science-based system which of those particular things is the one that's the best fit for you?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to make anybody all wrong. We don't have to have anybody all right. We don't have to try and fit everybody to a certain type of a straitjacketed type of thing. Do a couple of basic, simple things. Blood type is a profound thing. And I've looked at it for 25 years, and I still don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you some stuff about it. I can probably tell you, you know, a lot about it for a naturopath and a guy who's looked at it over the years. But I still don't know, really. I couldn't tell you, like, why it's there. I can tell you some guesses as to why it's there. But the one thing I can tell you is it's not there to screw up a transfusion, which is what they teach you in medical school.
Yeah. Are there subsets to the different blood types?
Well, blood type A has a variation called A2, which is sort of like about 15% of the A's actually have this variation of A called A2, which makes the other 80% A1.
Mm-hmm.
And the A2 variant is a little different. It's kind of a little slanty more towards the O type. Variations otherwise, the secretor thing is the single most important additional factor to add to the ABO.
Now
people always call in and go, well, what about the positive and the negative?
Mm-hmm.
In reality, Deborah, the positive and negative have very little to do with food, because the Rh system, the thing that makes you positive and negative, is a true blood typing system. It's only found in your blood, whereas ABO is found all over the place.
Sure. In the case when you say secretor, I know we have some of your secretor test kits here. And when somebody is chronically ill or they have chronic conditions that they're seeing a physician for, a naturopath or medical, would you recommend that they do the secretor test, non-secretor test, to see if they are a non-secretor?
I like to do the secretor test on all my patients. But that's just me.
Sure.
Mainly because non-secretors are the kind of people that most doctors wish they had a back door to their office that they could run away. Because
okay.
they're the chronically complicated patients. So knowing that you've got that patient in front of you is a pretty valuable piece of advice.
Okay. We got to go to a break. We'll be back with more of Naturally Good For You. And our guest this hour, Dr. Peter Diadamo, on Naturally Good For You radio show. I'm your host, Deborah Doc Watson. We have with us Dr. Peter Diadamo. And it's the 10th anniversary, I understand, of your Eat Right For Your Blood Type book. Is that correct?
It is. And surprisingly, it's still in hardcover.
Yeah. And it's not. Do you have it in paperback?
No. It's the European edition's in paperback, the UK edition, but not the American.
We better get one of those over here. Anyway, the whole thing is that we do have your stuff at our store, Doc Watson's Health Stuff, and we recommend that people, when they don't know where to start, that is a really great place to start. If they can't figure out what to do for themselves and they're not feeling good and they've got some problems, we recommend that they begin by reading your book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type, and following that program. I asked you a little bit earlier about the subsets, and you were saying that type A's. Do any of the other blood types have subsets, just A?
Actually, there's 13 types of type A, but nobody pays any attention to the other 12 because it's almost impossible to test for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a type of blood type A that's only found in certain types of Bantu speakers in Africa. But these are such minor discrepancies that they don't really factor into things that much.
I see.
There's, I think, two variations of B, but neither one of them are all that significant. They have the same physiology. The only one that really matters is the difference between A1 and A2. And strangely enough, the way that you determine whether or not a person is A1 or A2 is you drop an extract of a flower called Dolichos biflorens onto the blood slide, and if it clots up, the person is blood type A1, and if it doesn't clot, the person is blood type A2. And that chemical is actually called anti-A1 lectin. It comes from a plant I've never seen in real life, but it's very famous. This plant contains a protein that clumps only one subtype of A. It leaves the other subtype alone. So not only are things in this world proteins specific to your blood type, but some of these proteins in foods and things are so specific that they can be specific to one subtype or another. And in this case, it's actually used as a test to tell us which subtype is the other.
I see. When these lectins, what are going on in the body when you eat the foods that aren't healthy for you? You develop, there's lectins in the food which actually affect us. And what's happening at that point?
Well, you know, the lectin is one of the most common ways that there could be a food value in the blood type system. And lectin is a Latin word that means I choose. It actually comes, the derivation has to do with the Latin word for lock and key kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lectin is a protein. It's found often in seeds and in grains. Typically it's found in things that are part of an embryonic structure, so seeds and grains would make perfect sense because eventually they would turn into trees and stuff, right, if they
right,
were allowed
sure.
to grow.
Yeah.
So the great, you know, nature in its infinite wisdom realized that you couldn't give a grain or a seed a whole immune system, so they just gave them these chemicals that are called lectins that act like a primitive antibody. So the lectin, for instance, that's found in wheat, or there's a lectin that's found in lima beans and soybeans, all sorts of things. These lectins are like molecules, but they sort of look sort of like, I guess if you walk in the woods, you know, and you're wearing wool pants, you get these burrs that get stuck on your legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got to sit there and pick them off because once they get on you, they just got all these little hooks and stuff. And they just lasso on you.
Yeah.
That's a lectin. Basically, now, instead of your pants, basically, it's a protein, and it does it either to your immune system or your digestive tract. And the kicker is that the lectin is often specific to one blood type or another. So it's almost like saying, here's a piece of Velcro that only attaches to orange tennis balls but doesn't attach to blue tennis balls. Like, for instance, lima bean has a lectin that agglutinates our blood type A,
okay,
but it doesn't agglutinate the other blood types. Now, what happens when this lectin attaches to your blood type? Well, your blood type is lining your digestive tract, so the first place the lectin is going to probably come in contact with is going to be your small intestine.
Mm-hmm.
In your small intestine, if most people think of a small intestine, they think of like a sausage casing, but that's actually all dried out. If you think of your small intestine, think of a piece of terry cloth. You know how, like, in terry cloth got all
little
those little
fingers,
those
sure.
little nubby things sticking
mm-hmm.
out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are what you would call, in digestive terms, a villi, little finger-like projections.
Sure.
So when you look at your intestinal tract in the real world, it looks very velvety because of all these finger-like projections. And if you can imagine, if you took a microscope, these fingers would actually have on the top of them little more fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Called microvilli. So your intestinal tract has all these fingers and fingers of fingers because it's trying to maximize the amount of surface area to digest this meal you just ate.
Yeah.
When you eat a lectin that's bad for your blood type, the little fingers, the microvilli, get blown up. And they sort of look like when you give people a trick cigar and it blows up and you see this kind of cigar, but it looks like the end of it's all blown up. That's what the microvilli looks like. The lectin just basically just scours it. Now, if you destroy enough of these microvilli, you'll actually set up an inflammation type of a situation or a gut permeability situation, and you can actually wind up with things where you sort of inoculate that person's immune system to other things.
Right. We got to go to a break right now. We'll be back with more of Naturally Good For You. I know we have a caller on the line, and when we come back, we'll take your call. Stay with us.
Now, back to the show.
Okay, we're talking with Dr. Peter D'Adamo this evening, and we also have a Trudy from Illinois on the line. Hi, Trudy, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
was wondering if I could ask a question.
Okay.
What happens when you, I'm A slash B? You're talking A, B, O, or am I just being stupid here? I'd like to know. I'm A, B, positive.
Okay, that's another blood type, but Doctorpedia?
I barely heard that. Is she saying
she's questioning about being an AB?
A slash B, positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not an A slash B. You're actually an AB. You got both. Your congratulations. You're in about 1.5% of the world has your blood type.
Okay, because I want to buy your book. You know, I'm listening to the show. I listen to her all the time. And so that would be in the book, too.
Oh, sure. It's actually, it's an interesting blood type. It's actually the rarest. It's fairly tolerant. The other blood types largely come out of conditioning. That's the result of our migrations and all the different environments that we set up our shops in, various ways that we moved around the planet. Your blood type is the result of intermingling. So in order to make a person who's blood type AB, you have to have a parent who provides one A gene and one parent who provides a B gene.
Okay.
So you're the only blood type that really, from a design standpoint, is really the result of the ability of populations to have mingled for the first time, probably about 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. It's not found. It's, believe it or not, they can blood type like Graves and stuff, and they don't find much evidence of AB prior to about 1,000, 2,000 years ago.
Very interesting.
And eating... there's things that you could be eating wrong for that blood type too, right?
It's an interesting blood type. In the blood banks, it's called universal receiver. It's the only blood type that can take a blood transfusion from anybody.
Okay.
That sometimes can be a problem. You know, if you've got an immune system that tends to not consider anybody essentially suspect, it's like everybody is my friend.
Right.
Sometimes that's not so good.
I have an immune problem. I have Sjogren's disease, and you know, that's what I'm thinking about a lot of the foods. I do have an autoimmune disease.
I think one of the things you'll find by actually following the diet, actually it's kind of a unique thing because most diet books either talk about losing weight or lowering your cholesterol. And the blood type diet actually says, well, why don't you eat foods that are comfortable for your immune system? So you wind up with things getting better that had nothing to do with losing weight or actually a lot of conditions that are thought to not have no role with diet whatsoever improve with blood type, following the blood type diet.
Okay, we're going to have to go now. We're going to have to wrap it up. Thanks so much for being on the show, Dr. Peter
DiDomo. My pleasure.